I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, Juneteenth arrives this year as both as a celebration of African-American freedom and a reminder that the struggle to secure equal citizenship remains unfinished. The holiday represents more than emancipation remembered. It also offers an opportunity to consider how freedom can be protected and expanded through political participation, community empowerment, and cooperation among marginalized groups. That message carries particular urgency in 2026. In April, the Supreme Court sharply limited the Voting Rights Act, allowing electoral maps to dilute the political power of Black and other minority voters. When a group loses their political power, they are in peril. So where are we on Juneteenth 2026? Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source. But first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Juneteenth, how should we be thinking about where we are today as a nation in 2026, where hard-won voting rights for African Americans are at their weakest point that they've been since the passage of the Voting Rights Act? Juneteenth itself teaches that legal declarations do not automatically create lived freedom. The Emancipation Proclamation took effect in 1863, but enslaved people in Texas did not receive enforceable notice of emancipation until June 19, 1865. Freedom can't exist on paper before it can be secured in practice, and that's a concern. The 15th Amendment prohibited racial discrimination in voting, yet Black Americans endured nearly a century of poll taxes, literacy tests, intimidation, lethal lynchings, violence, and threats of violence before the Voting Rights Act of 1965 gave the federal government effective tools to challenge those practices, and even then, those protections were never self-enforcing. And now the U.S. Supreme Court has steadily narrowed them. In Shelby County versus Holder in 2013, the court disabled the Voting Rights Act preclearance system. And this year, the High Court substantially narrowed Section 2 protections against racial vote dilution and struck down a majority Black congressional district. We are witnessing new congressional maps across the South that make it harder for Black voters to have political power. Voting is not entirely about freedom, but it is a principal safeguard. You take away political power, other freedoms will follow at the courthouse and at the lunch counter. Is this the America that we want? What say you on this Juneteenth? Joining us to discuss Juneteenth 2026, we're joined by Catherine Meeks, the founder of the Turquoise and Lavender Institute for Transformation and Healing, a nationally recognized leader in racial healing and spiritual transformation. She is the author of Bridging the Rivers of Difference, also The Night is Long, but Light Comes in the Morning, and The Quilted Life. And Catherine Meeks, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be with you.
We're excited to have you. Also with us is Deborah O'Garman. She is the CEO of the San Antonio African American Community Archive and Museum, SACAM. And Deborah, welcome to The Source. Great to have you in the studio.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Gregory C. Huspeth is with us. He's the president of the San Antonio branch of the NAACP. And Gregory Huspeth, it's good to have you on air today.
And thank you for having us. Thank you.
And also joining us is Marion C. James, Professor of Sociology, Interim Associate Dean for Faculty, the Academic and Student Affairs at Prairie View A&M University. And Marion C. James, it's great to have you on the air.
Thank you.
So I want to ask each of y'all, I'll start off with Catherine Meeks, if you could talk about what are you thinking about in Juneteenth 2026? Is this Juneteenth another Juneteenth, a different Juneteenth? What are we thinking about, Catherine Meeks?
Well, the thing I'm thinking about the most is the grief I have about how divided we are and how much ground we still got to cover to actually have a country that is really clearly committed to the welfare of all the people who live here. And even though it's wonderful to have this commemoration day and to celebrate. This, for me, the celebrations are laced with a real soberness about what is really the real remedy for going forward that really will create a country that is doesn't keep reverting to oppression. Because all of what you just described in the efforts of the white supremacy energy system to destabilize the gains we've made in the past, that energy system has got to be interrupted to the point that it doesn't keep popping its head up every time we turn around. So, you know, while I think it's wonderful, we'll have a whole lot of wonderful celebrations in the next few days. I'll be participating in one myself tomorrow. But it will be grounded in a real understanding of we've got to find a new way to go forward.
Deborah Jarman, if you could talk about what's happening across San Antonio. Many, many wonderful cultural events are happening that SACAM has organized. These are celebrations of culture, history of San Antonio. This is although we have a history that is, I would say, there's some really bad parts of it. We can talk about that, but you're here to talk about that we are moving forward. We are united as a community, right?
Yes, and that's one of the things that makes San Antonio so special. When we look historically, even with the Republic of Texas and people who were not citizens, according to the Constitution, are now the people that are the majority in this city. So the fact that we've taken a place that technically wasn't home and created home, we couldn't do that in a vacuum. And for that, our stories don't exist in a vacuum. History is not your history or my history, it is our history. And everything that's happening as it relates to things that are trying to oppress us is really trying to keep us ignorant. So one of the things that we're doing at SACAM and across the community is making sure we understand what freedom cost. It's not automatic. There was a cost, and we all have a role to play. So there's a plethora of events across the county.
And we have many of them listed on our website at tpr.org. You could also go to SACAM's website. Yes. A lot happening. You're doing an event
tonight.
Talk about that.
Oh, music, dancing, all around the history of, we're calling it the soundtrack of 250 years. Since we're celebrating soberly America's 250th, we're going to look at how music has shaped America, especially music of African descendants, from Negro spirituals to the civil rights era to hip hop. All of that is going to be celebrated. And we have 3-time Grammy Award winning special guest, The Sounds of Blackness, along with the San Antonio Gospel Heritage Choir.
A lot of the music, the protest music of the civil rights movement, is coming back. I'm seeing people rediscovering that music as they're people being activated, saying we want to protect our rights.
Absolutely. And it's not just being activated by African descendants. It's being activated across the board as it was in the civil rights movement. Art Garfunkel is another good one who's coming. So
there's a lot happening. We're going to go to this break really quick. We'll continue talking to our guest, hearing what are they thinking about on Juneteenth 2026 at this particular time. This is a hinge point of history. And you can call in. Also, we want to hear from our listeners. What are you thinking about Juneteenth right now? The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. I got about 40 seconds here, so I quickly want to talk about, before I go to break, on this day in 1954, 6 black boys went to the Woodlawn Lake pool, which was segregated at the time, and they jumped in the pool. The police were called on them. They evacuated the pool and all the pools in San Antonio. The next day on Juneteenth, City Council of San Antonio formally adopted an ordinance creating a segregated law. And then that was fought, and that night, the KKK burnt a cross in front of the Woodlawn Lake pool. That pool is still there. I see it all the time. This is part of San Antonio's history. Eventually, they won a lawsuit, they settled a lawsuit, and it was desegregated. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Juneteenth 2026. Is this Juneteenth different? What are you thinking about as we celebrate Juneteenth? Let's go to, we have an all-star panel with us this afternoon giving great insight into the history and the context of the this incredible day. Let's go now. I want to hear, so Marlon C. James, Professor of Sociology at the Interim Associate Dean for Faculty, Academic, and Student Affairs at Prairie View A&M University. Professor James, if you could help us understand, what are you thinking about? What are your students thinking about Juneteenth these days?
Well, thanks for having me. These days are difficult days in America. It's difficult days for young people. I believe that how I look at Juneteenth is it reminds me to be determined, to understand that this is this quest for equity, this quest for justice, this just this quest to actualize freedom is going to be an ongoing fight and battle. And Juneteenth should remind us all that America goes through these cycles, these repeated, predictable cycles of social advancement, and then attempts to roll back those social advancements. We're in a cycle of rollbacks, but predictably in America, there has not been a season where we've experienced rollback, where then in subsequent years, we have not pushed and fought for social advancements in new ways. And my mind is focused on what do we do next? How do we organize? How do we get more young people involved? What's going to be our new way of talking about equity and justice? What's going to be our new initiatives that we will launch? How do we counter all of these different attempts to really violate the Constitution of the United States? And so those are the things that are on my mind. And I hope that many people, we just don't feel depressed and put down by all of these different movements that's happening around the country. These are predictable. These are absolutely predictable. But what's also predictable is that in time, as the seasons turn, we will have an opportunity to fight for equity and justice once more. And we should all be preparing ourselves for that reality.
Gregory C. Huspeth, president of the San Antonio branch of the NAACP. What are you thinking about in Juneteenth 2026?
Yes, I'm thinking about the battle that is still in front of us. One of the things we had thought is that we had made all of these great accomplishments. And then we have someone coming into office and under the philosophy of making America great again. And so we have to, and we are a nonpartisan organization, but we have to think about what was meant by making America great again. And so that within itself suggested that it was time to roll back the clock. And so rolling back the clock on the civil rights movement, rolling back the clock on the voting rights, rolling back the clock on rights that individuals have historically and thought were their rights, we started rolling that clock back again, if you will. And even today, as we look at the 14th Amendment, which guarantees citizenship at birth, there's an effort to roll that back. So the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendments were amendments that were implemented at the conclusion of the Civil War. Hasten to point out that when we looked at the 15th Amendment, and it granted the right to vote to African-American males. It did not grant the right to vote to females until the passage of the 19th Amendment. But we're watching those laws be rolled back. And we've always thought that the Supreme Court was the court that was there to protect these rights, and it was that sort of that safe haven, if you will, in which even if you had politicians that were in the process of not looking for equal and fair justice, you had a Supreme Court that would protect that. We don't have that same confidence today in the Supreme Court protecting those rights. When we saw the overturn of Roe versus Wade, we suggest that that was simply a trial balloon on other rights that could be reversed. When you have a member of the Supreme Court, Clarence Thomas, suggesting that Brown versus the Board of Education was wrongly decided. So we don't know where this will end, but what we do know is that we must be involved. One of those things, you know, what they're trying to do is to remove a significant number of African Americans from Congress, and that would also mean from the state legislature, et cetera. And the old saying, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And so what we need to do is ensure that we vote, and not just African-American voting, but that people vote, and they vote in order to protect individuals' rights. This is a concern that we should have throughout. If regardless of one's ethnicity, regardless of one's gender, if one's rights are being denied, then that means that all of us are subject to have those same denials of our rights. So that's what I'm thinking about today. I'm thinking about how do we move forward from here? We know where we are today, and we're not where we want to be, and we're not where we need to be, and we're not where we're going to go. Because what we're going to do is that we're going to push back. The NAACP has issued several lawsuits in which we have sued for our rights, and these are recent lawsuits. And we will continue to do that. We will continue to do that. We will continue to fight for equal rights and equal justice for all people, all people.
Marlon James at Prairie View A&M University. So how do we balance the joy of Juneteenth with the honest recognition of where we are today, mired in injustice and attack on voting rights?
Yeah, you know, that's probably one of the more difficult things, you know, being a father of three kids and a husband and a community member, a minister. And you see that these decisions, these laws, they're not neutral. They really hurt people. They really affect the daily lives of people. And when you think of young children, it creates fear and anxiety in them. And yes, we have holidays like Juneteenth, and it brings us joy. But we have to still carry out that the mission, the vision of Juneteenth throughout our lives on a daily basis. We have to bring joy to our kids' lives on a daily basis. So, I mean, some of the conversations I have as a parent and as a minister and as a professor with students is that despite what's happening, you're not just a victim to this reality. America is a place where you have to be an active participant. You are active participant when you go to class every day, you learn, you're preparing yourself to make change, make difference. When you're volunteering in your community, when you're doing voter registration drives. And as a parent, I try to have conversations with my children to help them understand the various histories and how they collide in these moments, but for them to also understand, you know, when Floyd happened when my middle daughter was in her sophomore year in high school, and she was devastated. You know, she walked up to me in the room and said, "Dad, why do people hate us because of our skin?" And it gave me a great opportunity to have this talk with my daughter about the multiple generations of challenges with these issues that my family has endured. My sophomore year in high school was Rodney King. My mom's sophomore year in high school in Louisiana was the first cohort to desegregate public schools. And so this gives us a great opportunity to talk with our children about this long history of advocacy, this long history of us overcoming, fighting, and striving to be treated as full humans, and helping them to see their role in that process. Yes, because oppression would have us all be depressed. Oppression would have us all be depressed about what's going on around us. We should be concerned, yes, but that concern should animate action within us all. At the individual level, it should animate action. At a collective level, it should animate action. At a community level, it should animate action. And for me, that's what joy is all about. It's about helping each young person understand that they play a role in this country. Whether you serve in the military, or you serve as a nurse, or you serve as a teacher, or you serve in politics, we have to each do our part to make this country a better place. And I don't want young people to get so angry that they forget that we've invested blood, sweat, and tears and centuries into this nation. We've invested that. Our ancestors have invested. Our ancestors have already paid the price. And many of our young people, they have freedoms and opportunities that even my generation didn't have, certainly not my parents and certainly not my grandparents. And so, you know, the joy of Juneteenth is that freedom is something that we have to fight for. It's not a neutral idea. Either you fight for it or you lose it. And so I want young people to stay encouraged, to stay active, to prepare themselves, to engage in multiple ways in making our country a better place. And if we all do that, Juneteenth won't just be a single day holiday. Juneteenth will be something we do every day.
Catherine Meeks, can Black joy be in itself a form of resistance?
I think so. And also, I want to say that for me, joy is emanates from having a vision for the future, which is what I have really engaged myself with in my new book that came out day before yesterday, Bridging the Rivers of Difference, A Proclamation of Unity and Resistance. I think that we've got to change the conversation in this country about race. I think that the major minority groups are going to have to come together and become more unified and get over some of our competitiveness and begin to create an agenda that actually benefits the general welfare. Because if we learn to come together, we will be a majority that can figure out what we want to do. And we will have enough people to change. We could even change the Constitution, which needs to be changed. And we are never going to get to sustainable freedom by just kind of being competitors and getting some rights here and some rights there, and then having these cycles where we go back and try to take them away. We have got to make some changes that won't be taken away. And, you know, we're going to be a country that is more peopled by minorities than white folks pretty soon, which is a part of why there's so much fear about everything right now. And I just think that if we can learn to start some new conversations and some new ways to be together and do some, come up with a new way to work toward freedom, that we will find ourselves in better shape. And so when I have, you know, I want to reimagine the way forward. And that to me is a source of joy. And it is so representative of Black people. Black people in this country have always been able to believe, to reimagine things. I mean, how on earth did the slaves survive if they could not have been able to see that this day could be? And I feel like I stand on a legacy of people who were able to always trust that tomorrow might be a better day.
How would you change the Constitution? I have about a minute here.
I would change the Constitution to be so that, you know, we put all these lofty words and stuff there, and then we turn around and we do amendments and we do, you know, you say that all citizens have a right to vote, but then you got to pass the Voting Rights Act. That doesn't make any sense to me. If we're citizens, we don't need a special edict to say that we have the right to vote. So I think we need to put some things there in our Constitution that stops some of this ability to keep on tinkering with the rights of the folks who live here. I don't know how all that could happen. I just believe it could. And I think that if we could learn to be together and start imagining what kind of country do we want to have? This country is predicated upon a very false premise of white supremacy. And we have got to destabilize that.
All right, we got to take a break here. Our phone lines are open. We do want to hear from our listeners. What does Juneteenth 2026 mean to you in this time where we're seeing the African-American vote being diluted, African-American congressional districts being wiped out, the destruction of this political power? It will just lead to the erasure of more rights and creation of a poorer nation. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The source will be right back.
Support for TPR comes from UT San Antonio, offering degree programs and research focused on workforce development, student success, and health innovation across Texas. UTSA.edu. UT San Antonio, the University of Ambition.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Juneteenth in 2026. What does it mean in this environment, in this context? How do we balance the joy, the celebration of Juneteenth, while also never losing sight of the fact that these are challenging times for African-American vote and political power in the community? When you lose your vote, you don't matter. You don't matter at the courthouse, and therefore so many other things will be stripped away. So how do we do that? Call in 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So Deborah O'Jarman, the CEO of the San Antonio African American Community Archive and Museum, SACAM, you are having an event this evening, the soundtrack of San Antonio's African American community, so many things happening across the weekend, a lot of great events. Why has music, food, worship, devotion, family, public celebration, why has that always been central to Juneteenth?
Well, I think it's several reasons. I'll go back to what Dr. Meek said about joy and what you're asking about joy. Joy is something that is internal. You can do a lot of things to me, but it is up to me to release that joy. So when you look at our food, we cook it. You can't take that away.
It's just, love is into cooking.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not a Black thing. It's a human thing. When you look at the way we worship humanity, you can't take that from me, especially now that we have the freedom to worship. But even if we didn't, we would worship secretly. You can't take it away. So when we look at also the fact that being enslaved was a public and economic situation. So you were sold on auction blocks and so forth. So why not celebrate publicly the victory of freedom, just like we celebrated the enslavement publicly?
Let me go to Gregory C. Hudspeth, the president of the San Antonio branch of the NAACP. Should every Juneteenth celebration include some form of education, remembrance of civil engagement, and where we need to be, keeping our eye on the prize?
I think that there are several things that could occur. You know, we can walk and chew gum at the same time. And so, yes, so we can have our celebrations and we can, you know, celebrate the accomplishments that we've had, but we also need to remember and, you know, deal with this in real time, and that is what's occurring today. We have an environment in which, you know, people will forget what you may say, and they may forget what you may do, but they will not forget how you make them feel. And so if people are made to feel less than someone else, then that's a problem. That's a problem we have. We have, when we look at the Constitution and the rights that were granted in the Constitution, you can put rights in, but what you cannot do is change people's hearts. And so the reason we've had to pass the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act and even amend the Constitution giving women the right to vote is because in spite of the fact, and the 14th Amendment says the right of citizens to vote shall not be, the 15th Amendment, right of citizens to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race or color. But it did not say gender. It did not say sexual preference. It did not say religion at that particular point. And so what we need to do is that we need to ensure that we're affording individuals all of these rights. So yes, we can celebrate and say, you know, Juneteenth is a wonderful holiday, and we can celebrate the fact that in Galveston, Texas, the slaves were told they were free. But now in real time, what does that mean? What does that mean when we look at the unemployment rate and we see the unemployment rate for African Americans is higher than the general population? What does that mean when we look at income and when we look at education? And so, you know, we have one of the panelists that's a professor at and an associate dean at Prairie View A&M, and it's because of schools like Prairie View and Texas Southern and other HBCUs that opened many of the doors for African American that were not automatically open for them. My kids had gone to go to any school they wanted to go to. And so they selected the colleges and universities that they would attend. But that was not something that was available to everyone. I mean, they were able to do it because I was able to send them partially. But that's not something that's available to everyone. And so we need to ensure that regardless of where this child, where this young person is attending school, that he or she's getting a qualified education. That goes back to even when we look at Brown versus Board of Education. The reason that was necessary is because the black schools were getting the hand-me-downs with regard to the materials. So I guess we can celebrate Juneteenth. I think it's a wonderful day, but we cannot forget what's occurring today as we speak.
Marlon C. James, Prairie View A&M University. So the phrase that I always wonder about, I hear about how Juneteenth, the message was the people were, African Americans, the enslaved people were told, you are now free. What I think about is how just because, I mean, because you are no longer enslaved doesn't necessarily mean you are free. There's a difference. Okay, you are no longer being held in bondage. You're now an individual and you're recognized under the rule of law. But still, there's a long way to go before you can achieve freedom, freedom of mind as well.
Yes, yes. There's a whole lot of writing, sociological, historical writing on the state of the black mind, if you will. And I think that that is a reality. And to be free physically does not mean that you're free intellectually. It does not mean you're free spiritually, right? And for me, one of the things I look at, particularly as a minister, is, you know, how do we obtain spiritual freedom? The freedom to love each other, the freedom to care for each other, the freedom to advance others' interests above and beyond my own interest. Right. And one of the challenges that enslavement created is it was intended to create the most dehumanizing condition possible. And it was designed to take humans and digress them to something beneath human. And after generations of enduring that, here is the beauty of Black America. Here's the beauty of Blackness. Almost the moment slavery ended, Black communities throughout the South opened their own schools, trained their own teachers, wrote their own curriculum. The same year slavery ended, created their own school districts. And the nation was stunned when the U.S. Department of Ed went South and started investigating the conditions of Black peoples. They had already created their own systems. And education is critical to freedom. And no one should, and education happens a couple ways. You have education that happens in formal settings like HBCUs, like high schools, but then you also have informal education that happens in families and churches, etc. Both are incredibly important. But freedom comes through education. And I was born in a housing project in Chicago. First generation college kid. I love working at Prairie View A&M because, like so many HBCUs, we provide education to young people who otherwise would not have access. They come from communities like me where no one went to college. They're poor. Now we have more diversity now. We, like, my kids go to Prairie View, right? So we have more diversity now, but by and large, HBCUs serve a population that would not have access to higher education otherwise. And in the coming weeks and months, like, you all will be amazed at what's happening at HBCUs right now. Absolutely amazed. The curriculum, the curricular innovations that are happening, that's going to push students from being marginal in our economy to being able to lead our economy. Those things are happening right now at HBCUs. And in the coming days and months, Prairie View will be announcing several of these initiatives. I am terribly excited about all these things. Additionally, let me make this final note. Tonight on the African American Network, 7 p.m., we'll be hosting a town hall of sorts where we'll be dealing with a Juneteenth discussion. And we'll be dealing with research that will help us to advance as we're stuck between achieving justice and searching for jubilee. There are things we can do in education that will promote our freedom. And myself and a few of my colleagues will be discussing research tonight. You know, please join us, because if we don't get common language, common goals, a common vision for our future, freedom is going to continue to elude many of us. But please join us tonight.
I do want to mention that Prairie View A&M University has been ground zero for so many efforts to eradicate African-American votes in Texas. And incredible history, incredible stories of efforts in the Supreme Court and beyond in order to try to maintain support and preserve that right. Fantastic work, generation after generation after generation right there on that campus. We got to take another break here. Phone line's still open. Give us a call. What are you thinking about on Juneteenth, 2026? Catherine Meeks, I really want to hear from you about these issues. 833-877-8255. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us.
The largest sports tournament in the world is about to arrive in Texas, the 2026 FIFA World Cup.
Teams from across the globe are set to play at Dallas Stadium and Houston Stadium in June.
Whether you're a diehard fan or just a little soccer curious, we've got you covered.
When the World Comes to Texas is a new podcast from KERA News.
We'll talk to the people holding down the sport and the culture here in Texas.
It's out now. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Juneteenth in 2026. Catherine Meeks, I want to talk to you. Your new book, Bridging the Rivers of Difference, A Proclamation of Unity and Resistance. You argue that Black, Latino, Indigenous, Asian American, other communities cannot afford to compete over whose suffering is the greatest. Instead, you're calling for an honest dialogue, stronger relationships, and collective action. But I want to talk to you about, because you speak a lot about the burden, I don't know if that's the right word, but, you know, when we had the end of enslavement, there was also a lifting of this horribleness off of the white community as well. There is healing that has to take place also in that community. There were white owners, or what do you want to call them? They were also beaten and tarred and feathered if they're people who thought they weren't cruel enough to their enslaved people. And they were also in this, and we all have to heal together. And this, so Juneteenth shouldn't just be a Black holiday. This is a holiday for everyone. Can you respond to that?
Yes, and, you know, I've spent the last 50 years of my life teaching and writing and thinking about racial healing and running centers and workshops and all these things. And what I have learned from that 50 years of work is that there are too many white people in the United States that don't understand how much racism has wounded them. And so this notion that you're coming to help people of color only is a misunderstanding of the history and a misunderstanding of what is going on in your own situation. So one of the first things when people ask me, well, what can we do? The first thing is to be honest about where you are, how you're benefiting from a white supremacist system that benefits you, that even if you don't want it to benefit you, it does. And if you're taking advantage of those benefits without becoming more conscious, then you're complicit with it. So part of your work is to really accept that, look at it, think about it, and make some decisions about how you want to be in the world. So, you know, I love Henry Nouwen's image of the wounded healer, that we're all wounded. And when we talk together and try to listen to each other and seek out ways to become more well, we're just telling each other where the bandage closets are. And I've spent my life, and I'm going to continue to spend my life's work talking about that and in trying to encourage people to understand that nobody has escaped this horrible system and that we need a new way to be. And white people have got to start being more conversant with that idea and stop kind of either acquiescing to the oppression or kind of thinking, well, my hear so much, well, my family didn't have slaves and we were better than that. Well, yeah, you were, but you're in here. And if you don't stand up to the plate to be a resistor, then you become complicit. And we've got to shift that. I mean, there's just no getting around that fact.
Let me go to a caller. We have Robert. And Robert, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. My name is Robert. I'm 73 years old. And I am, I love our country. And I also love what the black community has done for us as a person of color. Because of their bravery, many of the rights that we have, we benefited, all people of color. But I am sick and tired of what's happening right now, where we're losing those rights. But I think we're a great country. I think as we unite, we bring the young people into the picture and educate them the value and the importance of what we're losing. And if we unite and come out and vote for the right people, we can make this country great again, because the rights should belong to everybody, not only white America.
Robert, thank you so much for your call. Can I get your reaction to that call? Gregory C. Husbeth, president of the San Antonio branch of the NAACP.
Yeah, absolutely, because I think he's absolutely correct that we can make the United States is a wonderful country. I've had the opportunity to visit several countries in the world, and we're in good. We are a wonderful country in the United States. Our challenge is we took all of the rights that we had for granted, if you will, because we didn't think that they could be overturned, and we're witnessing that now. But he is absolutely correct. The real challenge for us is we register people to vote. We do that exceedingly well. What we do less well is getting them to vote on election day. We can register them, but we don't get them to the polls. And that's where we need to improve, because there are enough people out there that were they to vote and vote their conscience, that we will have a different government. You know, we always talk about these states being red states or blue states, and they are red states or blue states in many cases, because of who's not voting. And so those two court cases that you mentioned earlier, the Holden case as well as the Louisiana case, in both of those cases, particularly the case, the Holden case, and that was one that was designed to restrict the rights of people to vote. In Louisiana, it was designed to determine who you could vote for. But in both of those cases, it was because they feared the success of those individuals voting and voting the right way, voting for the people that would benefit them. And because whenever there's an election that doesn't go the way that someone doesn't believe it should have gone, then they cheated. I can't lose an election unless they cheat. And so we hear that too often now. And so, yes, I think he's absolutely correct. Getting the people out to vote is the answer. And that, in doing that, we can, and I hate to use the term, make America great again, because we're a great country.
Yes.
But we can improve the rights of all people, if you will, by getting people to vote.
So, Deborah Garman, at the SACAM, San Antonio African American Community Archive and Museum. Archive is what I'm stressing, because the role of memory and history, recognition of the people who have come before us, who have done so much, what happened on Edmund Pettus Bridge, to everything that happened here in San Antonio, the founding of the St. James African American Methodist Episcopal Church in 1868 by the formerly enslaved. They put so much sacrifice into the creation of that church. Now it's being celebrated on the banks of the San Pedro Creek, a beautiful installation. Everyone needs to come out and take a look at it and think about the people. Just try to imagine. Just try to put yourself in their boots for 1 second. It's impossible to do, but just if you can get a fraction of it, you will recognize that this was an act of devotion and an act of hope. So what can we learn about hope and action today?
Well, if they did that, if they created a church, if they were some of the first African descendants that voted here in Bexar County, 3 years out of being enslaved, what can we do today? It's endless. The challenge with the oppression of history, whether whose ever story it is that we don't get to see the resilience of people. We don't get to see how important all of our stories are in creating the amazing place that we call home. So archiving that work and then being able to share it, like we're doing this weekend with the St. James AME Church, is all of our jobs.
And so I want to get final word from Catherine Meeks. What do you want to leave us with? We've got a couple of minutes here.
Well, I wish I were in San Antonio, let me say that to the folks there. And I'm so excited to hear what's going on at Prairie View. I'm a retired professor, and I love the notion that higher education is taking some responsibility and dealing with some of these issues. And I'm so grateful for all of the celebratory things that are going to be happening. And I think that this is the kind of thing that helps us to get rejuvenated and re-inspired, so we know we can face another day and that we can keep being resistors of this negative energy that seeks to be destructive. And the other thing I would say is that I spent some time traveling to museums around the United States, to African-American museums some time ago, and it reminded me so profoundly that we're never going to go back to where we were, because we have done so much of a better job of archiving our journey. And you know, there's some things that can't be erased, and we've got to keep on remembering that. And as my mother used to always say to me when I was lamenting about something, she would say, tomorrow's another day. And, you know, we will be given another day, and we've got to stand up against all of the negativity for everybody and imagine a country where we are really living here as people who care about one another.
The night is long, but light comes in the morning. That was the title of your 2019 book. You talk about there is light coming.
Yes, I love that idea. You know, we weep tonight, but tomorrow light comes. And we all know about that. We all suffer. And we all know that, you know, it's about hope. It's about having hope. And we cannot let go of that ever.
Hope and action. Hope and action.
That's right. That's right. If you don't act, then the hope is not helpful.
Catherine Meeks, thank you so much for coming on board today, talking to us, founder of the Turquoise and Lavender Institute for Transformation and Healing, nationally recognized leader in racial healing and spiritual transformation, author of many books, the most recent, Bridging the Rivers of Difference. Also with us, Deborah Grimen, the CEO of San Antonio African American Community Archive and Museum. Tonight, you're doing a big deal. Where is it? What time?
At the Tobin, 7 p.m.
Be there. Also, Gregory C. Hudspeth, President, San Antonio Branch of the NAACP. Marlon C. James, Professor of Sociology, Interim Associate Dean for Faculty in Academic and Student Affairs at the Prairie View A&M University. Thank you so much for being with us today. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.